Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Remember thinking? Not the impulse following multitasking thing we do these days. Real thinking. For the last 30 years, Lenovo has empowered the world with technology like the ThinkPad X1 Carbon, powered by Intel vPro, an Intel Evo design built for what IT needs and users want. And for the next 30 years, we lean into our belief that the right tech removes the barriers to innovative ideas. So let's bring back thinking. Think on. Visit Lenovo.com/thinkon and get inspired by some of the world's most innovative thinkers.
Hi, I'm Professor Dan Angus, and you're listening to The Happy Pod.
Hi, I'm Dr. Graham Siggs, and you're listening to The Happy Pod.
A professor and a doctor, no less. You heard them. Welcome to The Happy Pod from the BBC World Service. I'm Jackie Leonard, and in this edition, we'll be in Australia, Germany, Canada, and Colombia, where a 13-year-old girl kept her three younger siblings safe for 40 days in the rainforest.
Leslie, sin lugar a duda, fue la que mantuvo a sus hermanos.
Leslie, without a doubt, was the one who kept her younger siblings alive. It was a miracle.
Also in this podcast,
Natasha has full control. She can alter the sails and the direction of the boat just by a sip and a puff.
The girl with cerebral palsy who sailed the Atlantic using her breath. And your favourite sounds.
The ripping of Velcro, screech of wheels on the floor, the oofs when people get a nice hit, piercing whistles from the officials. It makes my heart warm and pumps me up in a multitude of ways.
We begin with a story about observation, investigation, and the upside of having a big internet presence. It all began when Dr. Graham Siggs, a skin cancer expert, you might guess where this is heading, was watching the ABC Evening News at home in Adelaide in Australia. Professor Daniel Angus from Queensland University of Technology was on, and as interesting as his interview was, Dr. Siggs was distracted by the professor's appearance.
I was most interested in the brown spot on Daniel's right cheek, reasonably large, about a centimetre in diameter. And I thought that looked a bit strange, and I was very suspicious that it might be a melanoma. So I Googled his name and found that Daniel had many images of his face on the internet, and I was able to look back over the previous few years and discovered that that spot had not always been there, at least not as large as it was now, and that it had been obviously growing over a period of several years. So I wrote him an email.
Daniel, this would be an odd email to get. Did you consider ignoring it?
Yeah, it's a funny one. I do tend to get what I might term as fan mail occasionally. But yeah, this one, it didn't have, I mean, Graham was very careful in the way that he emailed it. He included information that for me, it absolutely checked out as legitimate. And this is someone that, if nothing else, is just concerned for my welfare. And, you know, I had consulted a couple of GPs previously about this suspicious spot. It's been on my face for about 10 years. And they kind of waved me off, just said, look, yeah, okay, it could be something. We're not quite sure. But it was on the back of the information and the confidence I had in Graham's advice, because with his, you know, additional accreditation, I thought, look, I really definitely should get this checked out. If someone's seen this, taken the time to write an email, that really sends a strong signal that they are confident that this is at least worth making another appointment. And the dermatologist straight away said, yeah, Dan, this is troubling and we definitely need to biopsy it. It did come back as all of the samples were indicative of a level zero melanoma, in situ melanoma. So that's when I got a referral to our public hospital. And they've got an absolutely wonderful kind of plastics team there who did an absolutely amazing job of taking the whole thing off.
How are you now?
Look, great, right? I mean, it's major surgery and, you know, it's a considerable pound of flesh I've given over off my face. But I will say this one thing, that most people that have heard the story now and I've seen in person are absolutely flabbergasted at how quickly it's healing. I've just got to say, they have done an absolutely amazing job, the surgical team, of doing this. It'll be a few months until it's fully healed. They're saying that, mostly the scar itself will be, largely invisible to anyone passing. And I'm not someone who's too kind of hung up on my looks anyway, but incredibly happy with the work they've done.
Well done to the doctors and staff who looked after you. Graham, is this an occupational hazard for you? Do you find yourself involuntarily giving everybody a once over when you meet them?
Quite commonly, when I'm out in public, I look at people's faces, and if they've got an obvious spot there, then I do take notice. I hone in on things. I guess that's part of my job, really. And I don't always speak to people about it. If I'm highly suspicious, then I might sort of tap them on the shoulder. Often in a supermarket checkout line, I might see something on the back of someone's neck that they may not be aware of, so I just let them know.
So, Dan, is there anything you would like to say to Graham?
I express then, I'll express again here, it just not a lot you can say in a circumstance like this other than express a huge amount of gratitude. You feel in a moment like this a second wind that you may have just, kind of avoided an otherwise bad fork in a road. It's an opportunity to kind of take that and, I don't know, do something positive with it, pay it forward in some way. So, Graham, I said it before, but I just owe you a massive debt of thanks. Certainly after the all clear, I had a spring in my step, and it certainly is a credit to the eagle eye of Graham. And to take the time and craft that email and kind of tap me on the shoulder, it's going above and beyond, really.
Will you be sending each other Christmas cards?
I might be sending more than a card to Graham this year.
Some of my colleagues have joked saying, is that all you get, a beer and a hug?
You haven't tasted my homebrew beer yet, Graham. I'll wait and you can reserve judgment on that one.
Professor Daniel Angus and Dr. Graham Siggs in Australia. And two more medical stories that we saw this week that are worth nodding to. First of all, on polio, a genetically engineered polio vaccine is showing positive data in its first stage human trials. It's designed to keep the virus used in the vaccine from mutating into a dangerous form by keeping it in its most weakened state. The scientists behind it are hoping the change could finally wipe polio out. And secondly, good news for Danistus Kunge, a former army sergeant in Sri Lanka who has been relieved of the world's largest kidney stone. The stone removed by army doctors weighs 800 grams, more than five times the weight of an average male kidney, and it's even been recognised by Guinness World Records. Now, around this time last week, the world breathed a sigh of relief.
Foram 40 dias perdidas sozinhas.
Four children have been found alive more than a month after their plane crashed.
Atención, encuentran con vida a los cuatro niños perdidos.
Ils sont épuisés, mais heureux. Les quatre petits Colombiens sauvés.
Four Colombian children found alive in the Amazon rainforest 40 days after a plane crash. Their mother and the two pilots died in the crash, and the children aged 13, 9, 4 and 1 had to fend for themselves. The children belong to the Witoto indigenous group, and after signs were spotted that they were alive, a huge search operation was launched which involved over 200 soldiers and members of the indigenous community. The calm leadership of Leslie, the eldest, has been praised. This is the children's grandmother speaking after they were found.
When her mother was working, she always looked after them. She gave them food. They knew which fruits to eat in the rainforest. I'm thankful to Mother Earth. I never let my guard down, me or their grandpa. We prayed all night.
We spoke to General Pedro Sanchez, who led Operation Hope, and he explained exactly what Leslie had to do.
Leslie, sin lugar a duda, fue la que mantuvo a sus hermanos.
Leslie, without a doubt, was the one who kept her younger siblings alive. She managed to get her youngest sister out of the arms of her mother, who died. She got her other siblings out too. She found things to keep them alive. She found one of the food packs we threw down from the helicopters.
La selva, además de ser un paraíso,
the rainforest is a paradise, but it's also very hostile territory. There are wild animals, jaguars and venomous snakes. trees of up to 20 to 30 metres. You can get lost in 20 metres. And the forest is so dense that you can be swallowed by it. It was a miracle. Not only did they survive the initial impact of the crash, but then the 40 days it took to find them. At one point, there were 115 soldiers and 93 indigenous guards searching. And we found them because their footprints were next to the paw prints of Wilson, one of our dogs involved in the search. He was with them and looked after them, but then got lost. In fact, at the moment, we're still looking for Wilson, as one soldier never abandons another.
General Pedro Sanchez, who has since become the godfather to the youngest of the family, and he was speaking to the BBC. All four children are in a stable condition and receiving treatment in Bogota, Colombia's capital. Now, a little secret. I like tea. I really like tea. I like it so much, in fact, that I usually have not one but two cups of black tea on the go at any one time. And it seems I'm not alone. John from Ireland sent in that recording to share the sound of tea being poured from his old red Polish teapot. He says it's not the same if it's a tea bag in a mug filled from the kettle. I hear you, John. But you might prefer coffee, like Luca Cordelli, who sent us this.
This is the sound of a mocha making its coffee. This is the sound that makes me really happy every morning during all my life. Apparently, I'm not the only one. 60% of Italians, according to a recent survey, put the sound of the mocha in the morning as one of the best sounds in their life. I'm going to enjoy my coffee now. Bye.
I think we enjoy coffee as well. Did your school have a prom? It's a milestone that many people look back on fondly when they reminisce about their school days, memories of dressing up, dancing with friends and celebrating the end of an era. And an unusual prom has taken place in Quebec High School in Quebec City, where the senior students decided senior citizens deserved a party too.
Come in, come in.
We can sit where we want.
Yes. My God, I'm happy to be everybody.
It's a beautiful. Everything's beautiful. The girls and the dresses and looks so nice.
We've been chatting away with each one of them and what they want to do when they grow up.
We're trying to find out why they invited us.
Elsa Mika, a Dutch exchange student, was one of the pupils who helped to organise the event.
We were in leadership class and we were supposed to do a project and we were just Googling fun ideas, and then I think it was Chloe that came up with, oh, we should do a prom for senior citizens, and we have two proms. And we were like, oh, such a good idea. So then we started setting it up and contacting the elderly homes, and then it all went rolling, yeah. They're just the most respectful people in the world, and they make me smile even when I see a person in the bus or whatever. I always greet them, and it really, yeah, it reminds me of my grandparents too. It's just really nice, and I'm really happy that it all happened. So yeah, a lot of reasons to smile the whole time.
Some of the guests brought keepsakes from their own school days to show the current students. Steve brought along his slide rule, an old-fashioned tool used to multiply and divide that he has carried with him ever since his days in the classroom.
Show you something from the past. Have you ever seen that?
That looks familiar.
Well, it's actually just adding logarithms, the logarithms in here, and that's how you multiply it. Before calculators. I went through secondary school and high and university with that.
I see you brought some photos too.
Yeah, I have all kinds of things. That's my graduation dress. And they're friends. This was our my identification card. I graduated here in 56, 57.
Wow.
This is my ring and my pin. I have several of these. They were the prizes, and they have the crest on it, which was kind of nice. But when I opened this one, I really had to laugh. It was for punctuality and attendance. I guess we weren't allowed to stay home.
Well, have a great prom.
Thank you.
Still to come. Why Mongolian women are joining the long song tradition.
Remember thinking? Not the impulse following multitasking thing we do these days. Real thinking. For the last 30 years, Lenovo has empowered the world with technology like the ThinkPad X1 Carbon, powered by Intel vPro, an Intel Evo design built for what IT needs and users want. And for the next 30 years, we lean into our belief that the right tech removes the barriers to innovative ideas. So let's bring back thinking. Think on. Visit Lenovo.com/thinkon and get inspired by some of the world's most innovative thinkers.
The Explanation is the podcast from the BBC World Service that goes beyond the spin, exploring the important questions about long-running stories and the latest global news. An honest explanation of the events shaping our lives. Search for The Explanation wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
A lot of people around the world are trying to move towards cleaner, greener transport. Indeed, most of the major manufacturers are getting in on developing their own electric vehicles. But it isn't just the big corporations. Let's meet Yahya El Bakali, co-founder and CEO of a new Anglo-Moroccan technology company called the Atlas E-Mobility Group, who has big plans to create the first African-designed and engineered electric car.
There's a lot going on a global stage. But when it comes to Africa in particular, there are not so many initiatives. If you look, for example, at China, there are currently over 600 EV ventures. If you look at the US, there is over 200 EV ventures. But if you look at African continent, there are not so many initiatives around electrification and electric vehicles. So that was actually brought our inspiration to take this initiative. And I think if we don't make an initiative ourselves as Africans, we can't be expecting other car makers to come and rescue us. So it should be our own initiative to create something for the continents and beyond. The continent's population is increasing massively, and it's expected to reach 2 billion people by 2050. The average age in Africa is about 19 years old, so there is a huge young population there. And there are so many talents, so many untapped opportunities and resources. So the question is actually, why not? Why not take an initiative and create something that makes African people proud?
And it's interesting because, as you say, there is this global push towards trying to create electric vehicles and to move away from the regular fossil fuels. What do you anticipate the difficulties being in creating electric vehicles and a market for electric vehicles in Morocco?
I mean, for us, the main three challenges that we find that consumers actually facing when they try to buy an EV is, first, the range anxiety. Second, the charging infrastructure availability. And third is the affordability. So these are really the three key challenges that the consumer face. Building a car company is definitely challenging. But of course, that brings with it that excitement of overcoming challenges every time.
Yahya El Bakali, CEO of the Atlas E-Mobility Group. Velcro, whistles and the sound of oofs. That's what brings joy to one listener. Amanda Majerovic from Germany is a roller derby fanatic who got in touch to tell us what gets her heart pumping.
All right, you ready? Bear City on three. One, two, three.
Bear City!
There's just like this electric feeling of excitement in the air. And when you hear people skating around, you hear the wheels on the floor, you hear people trying to do different kinds of stops or hit each other, or it's the rip of the Velcro and screeching of the wheels. The whistles are just so uplifting, and I have shivers right now because I'm just like so excited. But yeah, and then when it's a big tournament like that, just hearing so many people in the arena or wherever it is cheering everyone on, because I think that's another thing that's amazing about roller derby is that all of the fans cheer for everyone. That's not necessarily like us versus them. I know for me, whenever I'm cheering, I cheer on and I say, hey, that was a really great hit. even if you hit me, one of our goals is to just stay happy and positive and excited. I think when I haven't gone to practice for a while, I definitely notice a difference in how I am. Like, that's definitely an outlet that I use to get so much of my energy and emotions out. And it's a great way to like get out your frustration, or even if I'm like really, really happy or excited, it's the outlet so that all of the emotions and feelings are not just built up inside of me.
Nice job. Good game. Good game. Good game. Good game. Thank you. Good game.
And our thanks to Amanda for that. Now imagine sailing a 46-foot yacht and controlling it with your breath. Natasha Lambert is 17 and has cerebral palsy. She can't use her arms and legs, so her engineer dad invented the technology that helped her sail the Atlantic. Rachel Burden has been speaking to Natasha, her dad Gary, and mum Amanda.
What was it about sailing that you loved? Did you feel a certain freedom on a boat?
Definitely, lots of freedom. You love being outdoors, the weather, the wind, the rain, everything.
So this was a passion then that your mum and dad obviously felt that they really wanted to encourage. But it was also about, practically speaking, how you managed to operate a boat yourself, right? And then that's where your dad Gary steps in. So is he quite handy with this kind of stuff? Do you know much about boat sailing, Gary?
When we started, I knew nothing about boat sailing. So it's all...
I can tell, because Natasha's absolutely laughing all over the place here at the suggestion.
So, no, we weren't a sailing family when this all started. So we had to learn quite rapidly. We learnt that there were no experts in the controls that Natasha needed. So it was down to us to develop it and get it to where it is.
So who else is in the boat? What does the boat look like? How does it work?
It's a 46-foot catamaran. This is the boat we cross the Atlantic in. And there was the four of us, our family, and we also had another four crew on board. We were sailing for 18 days, day and night.
And Natasha, what about your role in all of this?
Natasha basically makes the decisions. We put all the information in front of her, and then she makes decisions and we carry them out. So she's skipper.
And Natasha, what's this about you steering the boat with your breath? Is that an accurate way of describing it?
It is. Natasha has a small tube that is held in place in a helmet, and that works the controls of the boat. It's wicked.
Easy.
So Natasha has full control. She can alter the sails and the direction of the boat just by a sip and a puff.
It's extraordinary. So Natasha, what next? Around the world?
She says she's going to give up. No, she didn't. She said
you wish.
She'd like to do a Pacific crossing.
Amazing.
Natasha Lambert and family, who sailed the Atlantic using a sip and a puff. Dave from London is a massive Bruce Springsteen fan, and he also happens to have Parkinson's disease. And he says the boss has helped him with his symptoms.
My happy sound is the sound of Bruce Springsteen when he first walks out on stage. I was diagnosed with Parkinson's 12 years ago, and rather than celebrate my Parkiversary, the day I was diagnosed with something downbeat and feeling sad, I normally go and see Bruce Springsteen somewhere in the world. So I've travelled to Cape Town, I've been to Perth, Australia, I've been to New York to see Bruce. And the moment he walks out on stage, the optimistic energy is just brilliant. The crowd are all quiet, then the lights dip, and you just see this shadowy figure walk out from the back of the stage, and you see Bruce. And he says hello wherever you are in the world. You know, hello Edinburgh, hello London, hello New York. And then just goes straight to a track. And that moment just sends me wild. I have tears in my eyes and goosebumps all over. So Bruce Springsteen, the moment he walks out on stage and greets the crowd, it's just a magical moment. And it sets you up for the night. And I went to see my specialist after a Bruce Springsteen concert. He jokingly said, I'm going to prescribe 3 Bruce Springsteen concerts a year to you because you're in such good form after seeing him. It's amazing. So that's my happy sound. Bruce walking out on stage. Cheers.
Dave has seen Bruce Springsteen 22 times in total. He'll be jetting to Sweden to see him at the end of June. And Bruce, if you're listening, fancy a chat with the Happy Pod? Well, it's worth a try. And now let's end with some song, some long song to be precise. For centuries, a Mongolian celebration would be nothing without this genre of music, which gets its name not just from the length of the pieces, but also because each syllable of each word is extended. A 4-minute melody, for example, may consist of only 10 words. Until very recently, long song was mostly performed by men, and women were actually forbidden from singing some of those songs. But times are changing, with the Mongolian Tourism Board now inviting women to showcase their cultural heritage.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, long song singer Urin Veya.
Hello, my name is Urin Veya. I'm a singer of long song.
Tonight is the closing ceremony of an international conference organised by the government as part of their campaign Welcome to Mongolia. It's a big event, and I'll be singing long song at the climax. Long song is a type of music that's been performed for more than 1,000 years by nomadic people in Mongolia. It's one of our most distinctive and special art forms, and that's why it's been chosen to show off our country at this event. When I was little, I'd listen to long song at family gatherings. It would be sung at weddings, at springtime, when the horses had had a new foal, and I loved it. My grandpa was one of the best long song singers in our family, and so I'd sit at his knee and listen to it. Because of that connection, I decided I wanted to be a long song singer too. Long song is part of nomadic life. It's traditionally been sung by men on horseback as they rode for hours across the countryside. Mongolia has been a patriarchal society since the time of Genghis Khan. Even till recently, there were some songs that were forbidden for women to sing. But times are changing, and perceptions are changing. And today, in many parts of Mongolia, there are many more young female long song singers than men. I think women's voices are received better here in Mongolia and across the world. There's something about the female voice when it sings long song that just seems to touch people. Men have a bigger vocal range, and that can be very impressive to show off. But musically, there's something very distinctive and different about the way women long song singers breathe and the pure beauty of the sound. It's very special. In my career, I've been invited to more than 40 countries to sing long song, promoting Mongolia as a country and showing off our cultural heritage. It makes me feel very proud, and I'm really looking forward to seeing more women singing long song across the world in the future.
The beauty of Mongolian long song. And that's it from us for now. If you would like to get involved in the Happy Pod, we would love to hear from you. Send us the sound that brings you joy. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. You can also find us on Twitter at Global News Pod. This edition was mixed by Javed Gilani. The producers were Phoebe Hobson, Tracy Gordon and Anna Murphy. The editor is Karen Martin. I'm Jackie Leonard, and until next time, goodbye.
Remember thinking? Not the impulse following multitasking thing we do these days. Real thinking. For the last 30 years, Lenovo has empowered the world with technology like the ThinkPad X1 Carbon, powered by Intel vPro, an Intel Evo design built for what IT needs and users want. And for the next 30 years, we lean into our belief that the right tech removes the barriers to innovative ideas. So let's bring back thinking. Think on. Visit lenovo.com/thinkon and get inspired by some of the world's most innovative thinkers.